Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking divestment. And speaking of an old fossil that we all need to get rid of.
I knew it was going to be directed at me. I have been carbon dated. Yeah.
If there'd be no heat if we burned you though, that's the problem.
I have been carbon dated. I am this century.
Like rings on a tree, folks. Much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by researching and campaigning on environmental climate justice with Friends of the Environment Ireland. After making a balls of that.
Not at all.
Clodagh, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I'm sorry it's taken us this long to bloody get you across. Totally our fault. We were put in touch by a mutual friend who said we should revisit first of all one of the things we've covered previously, and that is Ireland's reliance in Money Point on Colombian coal, which is our biggest fire burning energy producing plant. And you've given talks on this. You've talked to people about it. Where are we stand now? Has anything changed since the last time we touched on this about 6 months ago, Mark?
Yeah, and about that. And Money Point's was closed for 3 months as well. So, there was a lot of questions there. Why didn't it stay closed? Mm. If you could touch on that for us as well, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So Money Point is Ireland's only coal-fired fire station. It's located in County Clare and it's owned and operated by the ESB, a company that's 95% state owned. And I suppose I came to the issue when I was doing a master's, not last year, but the year before, and found out about this just kind of randomly in class one day. One of our lecturers just asked us, does anyone know where Ireland's coal comes from? And there was just silence and I'd kind of guessed maybe Poland,
Yeah.
And then he said, Colombia. I was like, what? Like, why are we shipping coal from the other side of the world all the way over here? And started looking into it from there. And that was basically after that, got involved with the Latin America Solidarity Center and we have tried to get a campaign off the ground, and that's why the talks have been happening and all the rest. So actually, yeah, a lot has changed since Avi Chomsky was here, and a lot has changed within the last year. So I suppose really it's become such an emblematic case of just transition that it's just unfolding before our eyes. So first of all, Money Point was offline for 3 months in 2018. I think it was from September through to about the end of November, and no one knew about it. So that just shows that we don't need coal in our energy mix anymore. That was due to some operational difficulty, some mechanical difficulty that I'm not sure of, which was then fixed. So, but then again in earlier on this year, it was offline again. And this time it was actually because the price of carbon under the EU carbon pricing ETS system was too high. So, coal is not only not needed, but it's just not economically viable anymore. So from if you're being a really fundamental climate activist or researcher, I guess, about it, this is all great news because Money Point is the single biggest source of Ireland's emissions. And coal is just the dirtiest form of energy that there is. But of course, when we're talking about how are we going to move to a better kind of society, how are we going to address climate change? And the thing is that the only way that these problems can be solved is if we do it in a way that is inclusive and that is, putting those who are affected, first, which is very kind of common sense, I'd say.
Yeah.
This has just been already just kind of a disaster for workers at Moneypoint. I mean, in July, the ESB came out saying there's 100 jobs out of 190, only 194 that are at risk now. And I mean, again, like, this is a state-owned company. Like, they've known for years, they've known for so long that they were going to phase out coal by 2025, and now that might come sooner. And like, how have they never ever had to look at, okay, well, what are we going to do for people who have provided our country with electricity for decades? You know, like, how are we going to ensure?
So it's the cutting edge of a just transition too.
Yeah.
And if they can't treat direct line employees justly, what hope for everybody else?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And especially just the fact that it's, I mean, it's funded with taxpayers' money. I mean, shouldn't they be leading the way in setting an example of how it should be done?
Yes.
Do you know? So it's just...
Well, when you think of the debacle of this, it's, we've seen coal produced under enormous human rights abuses in Colombia.
Yeah.
And then when we go full circle and we bring it here, and now we can't even get the divestment correct. And it, you know, when we do, people see things, you know, the people jumping up and down saying, oh, the Green New Deal, they're all mad, you know, and you're going, well, not if it's actually a job builder, not if it's an economy builder, not if it's it just frightens traditional methods of implements of the state. But 10 years ago, the biggest companies on the stock exchange weren't the tech companies. Well, maybe 20 years ago, sorry. But since then, you know, the likes of these companies, they do evolve, and
totally,
and that's the only way to take it forward. But in terms of the so we should say, look upon it as a right, it's good news from, as you said, from a purely emissions based
if you're just being very fundamental about it, then sure, like, this is good news. But
it won't be good news if you have like in the, I hate to say it, but like in the Trump sphere where they said we have to go back to coal because we lost these jobs. And that was, you know, that was the battle cry at his first, in his first campaign was, you know, I'll go back to the coal mines, will be back and clean coal.
They can't do that here though, because of the CO2 charges. So it's the workers who are going to take the brunt of the hit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is there, I know in terms of climate mitigation and the things we need to be doing, but in terms of this, the Green New Deal, is there something in that that you think Ireland should be actually, as you say, particularly companies like the ESB, be at the forefront of initially? Is there anything that jumps to mind straight away?
Well, what's funny, and this has been pointed out by Sinead Mercier, is that other countries that are looking to establish a Green New Deal, one of their main ambitions is to nationalise their energy companies and to nationalise the grid. We have both, you know, we are two like biggest companies, or three biggest companies. So ESB, Gas Networks Ireland and Bord na Mona are all state companies. Our grid is nationalised. So, I mean, we are already steps ahead of where other countries are trying to get to. So this shouldn't actually be as scary a leap as it's kind of framed as. And the other thing is that Ireland just has such enviable renewable energy potential. Like, we have, I think, 70% of the sunlight that Madrid gets.
Okay.
It might not always seem that way. But in terms of like powering solar energy, in terms of powering solar energy and what you need for that, we have it. We've got incredible wave potential being an island out in the Atlantic. And why aren't we harnessing that? You know, it's just so there are so, in fact, there's so much that needs to be done that we're going to need to put, we're going to need so many people to work. And I think focusing first and foremost on developing our renewable industry would be the best way to go in terms of getting a Green New Deal off the ground.
And I think also of, you know, you mentioned Bord na Mona, and you mentioned the idea then a lot of these peat bogs that have been harvested, for want of a better term. There's carbon capture potential in all of these areas if they're maintained and correctly done. And we're not
talking about that. Well, government isn't talking that. I think they're talking about the potential to take in fracked oil. You know, that's the level we're at.
I know it's like there's just no kind of thinking outside the box at all. And actually, that's something that is so there's going to be a debate in the Dáil about that tomorrow because, which is great news that they actually managed to get it into a debate because that's what is being talked about at the moment is replacing Moneypoint with a liquefied natural gas terminal.
You got to give the LPG guys credit. They've done a great job of marketing their product.
I know. It's really, really impressive. But it's also like their lobbying power and the...
Well, that might explain why the terminals have got to go ahead before the debate has happened.
Martin, a transitional fuel.
I know.
It's great.
If you get someone
to get the right buzzword, people will buy it.
Like transitional direct provision.
No, it's Corporate Observatory Europe have done a brilliant report on that, just showing the just incredible lobbying power of gas companies in Europe. It's just second to none, really. They're really deep in the pockets
I think Gazprom are third or fourth. When I mentioned earlier, the biggest companies in the world, they're third or fourth biggest company in the world. Mm-hmm. Like it's them, Google, Apple. You know, there's either Exxon, Gazprom, and then there's the tech companies, and that's it. And I always go back to the story about when Syriza got into power, and everybody said that they were made an example of for standing up to the EU. But one of the main reasons they got in lots of trouble is because one of their pledges was that they would stop the drilling happening in one of their national parks. And they went and had the temerity to do it. So in week one, they had said, stop the drills. And the boys went around and said, the big oil companies leaned on thing and said, no, our drills go back. And they did go back on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you want to know where the power is, tends to be where the money is.
So is there an alternative for Moneypoint beyond coal and, again, beyond the, you know, important fracked gas, you know?
Yeah, there definitely is. I don't necessarily think that it should be coming from me. I think it should really be coming from the workers themselves and the people that live in the area, you know, who I'm sure have a lot of ideas of how it should look. But as I said, like it's on the West Coast. There's no reason why we couldn't deploy wave energy right there, you know?
Yeah. It's actually quite a good spot.
And wind energy as well.
Yeah. Has wind lost a little bit of its allure?
I don't think so.
All right. No. Yeah. It's just because you mentioned solar and you mentioned gas.
Wave. I suppose wave is just something that we just have enormous potential for in Ireland and it hasn't really been developed yet.
We do. We have so much coastline. It's unbelievable.
So that's just something that could be. It is being researched at the moment and will hopefully be developed further.
Okay. Yeah. Now you had... Or there was a case recently.
Mm-hmm.
Will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So that was Climate Case Ireland. It was a legal case taken by Friends of the Irish Environment, and it was against the Irish government, basically challenging its inaction on climate change and saying that it is infringing citizens' human rights and constitutional rights as well. So we challenged their 2017 National Mitigation Plan, just basically saying, you know, that plan shouldn't really have been passed into law because it doesn't account for reductions in emissions in the short term. And we know that when it comes to climate change, it's really the short term that makes all the difference. So we just said that plan shouldn't have ever been passed into law because it's actually inconsistent with Ireland's national, EU and international legal obligations on climate change. So we had our hearing in January and it lasted for 4 days. We had 19,000 signatures of support from the public saying that the case was taken in their name or on their behalf. So it was really huge campaign as well as legal action. And we had our judgment just about 2 weeks ago and it didn't go in our favor at this point. But there were some really significant outcomes. So the judge recognized the seriousness of climate change. He recognized that we have a right to bring the case. And that was really, really significant, actually, because the state was trying to argue the whole way through that, you know,
it was frivolous, more or less.
Or vexatious.
Well, yeah, not necessarily vexatious, but that we shouldn't have a right to bring the case.
Okay.
Yeah, that, you know, who are you as an NGO to be taking this case in the public interest? And what was really phenomenal was that during the hearing, we had had a huge turnout actually in the four courts.
The galleries were full,
Packed. At one point, the judge had to stop proceedings to ask people to scooch up the aisles closer to his desk. And there was such a mix of people there as well, because Ireland is really small. And, you know, normally when you're involved in stuff like this, when you show up to events, it's kind of the same faces. Even though I have to say now it's growing more and more and it's new people a lot of the time. But yeah, you know, there were, there was a mother breastfeeding. There was a Deliveroo guy. There was one guy, I think he was an engineer. He was there every day with his 6-month-old baby. There were artists and students
and Niall Sargent
every day. Yeah. Your favorite. Yeah. Niall is fantastic. Yeah. He gave such great coverage of the case as well the whole way through. And
damn his handsomeness.
So yeah, and I mean at one point actually there was like a class of students in sixth class that just came in and sat on the floor. It was just completely packed for the full thing, so it was really difficult for the state to try and say, you know,
who are you
to take this in the public interest? And so the judge actually said that we do have the right to bring this case, that we do have standing, that's what they call it, to bring the case.
That's an important precedent.
It's really important. And I think it will hopefully help other groups in bringing cases forward as well. So basically what it came down to is the separation of powers, that the court doesn't want to be getting involved in a government issue. It doesn't want to tell the government what it should or shouldn't do for its national mitigation plan. So
which is funny because we have the same argument around housing. We talk about the UN wrote to the Irish government and said you're in breach of international law as housing as a human right, and as I recall the statement, oh yeah, we don't like your letter, we'll write back to you. And you know, and we haven't had the balls, I want to say, because, and I know it's a terrible thing, it's such a lad thing to say, but there is that it's just you from using that phrase to turn around and say, well, actually, we should take a case and say the UN has said, you know, there's a human right to adequate housing, and the UN has said the Irish government aren't fulfilling that.
You'd need class actions.
We don't have class action in Ireland, and that is one
asterisk. I'll just put an asterisk there because I disagree with you that we don't have class actions. We do in some forums.
Yeah, it's a difficult nut to crack. But the same way in the UK when the banks went down, they were able to take class actions against banks that said they were solvent and weren't solvent, and whereas in Ireland
we can't.
So all of these things, you know, are not. It's not real justice if you don't have access to justice. So having won that point, that is a step forward. Where do we go to now?
So we are considering grounds for appeal at the minute, and so fingers crossed, and we'll see what happens. But we're not going to go anywhere in any case. Like, we're still going to continue the campaign and continue holding the government to account.
Well, how can you not? When they say we've 12 years, people, to make the point, you've 12 years, but it doesn't, that doesn't mean you've 12 years to start. exactly. means you've 12 years to have it done by, you know, yeah. in terms of yeah. climate action.
Have you a time limit on your appeal? 21 days, is it?
No, no. We have, I'm actually not sure if there is a specific.
Oh, that's good. That's yeah. good. So give yeah. you a bit of time to look at the judgment and decide what's in it and exactly. what you can do with it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see that leeway because usually it's pressure to find something, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I know for sure. It's good to have.
Has it been, you said about a minute ago and it just jumped into my head, so I'm sorry for, I didn't, but you said about going to protests and going to meetings and all for the last number of years and seeing the same faces.
Mm.
It must have been a real shot in the arm to see the results in the local elections, to see the Fridays for Futures, to see the kids' climate strikes. How is that, what has that meant to you guys in your overall climate action?
Oh, it's just been incredible. And I think especially because when we lost our case and we were, well, I'll just say we lost it at this point because we would hope that maybe we can keep moving forward. But, you know, the next day there was the biggest mobilization for climate justice that the world has ever seen. It's phenomenal.
Mm.
And I suppose like what we had hoped to do with the case was to use it as a campaign to try and change some of the narrative around climate change, which has from the government really been very onerous on individuals. And like,
and remains so.
Remains very much so. Yeah. And that, like, fair enough. Like, yeah, there's a certain amount we can do within our personal constraints, but like, we're never really asked to take personal responsibility for the housing crisis, or we're never asked to take personal responsibility for, I don't know, unemployment. Like, it's like, why are we being told that this huge structural societal issue is down to our individual choices? So we kind of hope to frame it as, you know, our leaders actually have a legal responsibility to protect us.
Mm.
To protect our fundamental rights and prevent the worst impacts of climate change, that they don't just have kind of a discretion just to delay action.
Well, dare I say it, if you don't like climate change, you can always leave.
Yeah, pretty much.
Elon Musk over there.
Yeah.
But but it is so. It is very important that it is framed like that, because when we look at it, households are 9 to 11% of the emissions. Transport, agriculture, big aviation. Manufacturing.
Even like within the fact that households account for those emissions. I mean, there's so little choice I'm renting. Like, I don't have a choice in the fact that my house isn't retrofitted or.
We said this, or Tony said, I'll give him credit where it's just come up with some gems. Yeah, more than half the households in Ireland rely on a social welfare payment just to make ends meet.
Yeah.
Now, you can have as many incentive schemes as you like. Yeah. If these people can't go to the bank and borrow money to retrofit their houses, well, then they can't retrofit their houses.
Exactly.
And the vast majority of those people cannot go to the bank and borrow money.
And they can't get electric cars, that's for sure.
No, you can't.
Like you cannot make it about, I think it's the phrase that I'm hearing more and more often is that, you know, keep cups aren't going to do it.
Well, again, Tony, you can have as many steel straws or paper straws as you wish, but in reality, the individual is a spectator. You're a spectator in the crowd looking at this. And no matter, you can do a little Mexican wave around the place, but you're not changing the game. You're not changing what's happening in the game. And you need central government to actually tackle what they are empowered to tackle.
Can the other thing in the state's 2040 plan and the rollout and you know, because we know they had to go back to the few months after they embarrassingly put it out and said, oh, no one, we didn't mention sustainability in this thing, and we have to go back and add in an afterthought of the environment. But if they actually hit their goals, the goals run contrary to the carbon emission reductions. You can't do both plans. is there anyone that you think of that any models that we should be saying, well, they're getting it right? Because I know of countries that are saying we've hit our 2025 targets. Let's go more ambitious now. Let's actually try and do it. And some of them, here's me being mildly controversial. Some of them use nuclear power to offset these things. Mm-hmm. You know, what are your feelings on the countries that are doing it in those models?
There are countries that are definitely doing far better than Ireland. I suppose that's not really difficult because we're the worst performing in the EU on climate action. Costa Rica actually has really ambitious targets, and I think that's something that's quite important to just keep in mind, because we often are kind of told that, you know, that developing, or let's say emerging economies, are going to need to use fossil fuels in order to raise the standard of living. And I kind of think that a lot of them are already just far more advanced than where we are now. I was listening to the Mothers of Invention podcast a few weeks ago, and they had this lady on who was kind of laughing at the idea that countries in Africa would want fossil fuels, and she's kind of saying, well, why would we get ourselves into that mess? Like, look at you guys trying to transition away from this really dirty energy system. You know, it's kind of like, why would we, you know, if you never had telephones, like, why would you bring in cable wires? Yeah. You'd just go straight to mobile phones.
Well, you don't need to have Betamax and VHS to watch a movie.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, technology is already there, so it's just a matter of getting there faster.
And you're right, because I you know, I even reading things recently about we talked about the emerging nations, India, Brazil, and China. You used to say the BRIC countries, man: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and how they were. But you know, unfortunately, Russia is, you know, Gazprom is their baby. But what we're seeing in Brazil should terrify us all in terms of what Bolsonaro was thinking. Yeah. But we also know that there are better methods of agriculture. There are better methods of doing these things correct. Like, we have conversations with Saoirse McHugh about managing hedgerows and things like that. So there are better ways, and you're quite right to point out that it doesn't necessarily mean that, why would you want to, if you're setting up your first plant in an emerging nation, it doesn't have to be taking the cheap coal that the Irish didn't want anymore.
Yeah, but a dispiriting thing about it too is, even if we did away with Colombian coal, the IFSC is still trading in Colombian coal. You know, so, you know, you're still perpetuating the problem.
Yeah.
You might remove it from your own immediate environment, but you're still perpetuating the problem.
Exactly. And I think people are starting to get more clued in to the responsibility of the financial sector in making the transition possible, actually making it feasible. And I think it's something that is often overlooked when we talk about the Paris Agreement. We hear a lot about mitigating and adapting. But another headline goal was actually to align finance with the Paris goal of staying within 1.5. And we are subsidizing fossil fuels to the tune of billions per year.
Yes.
And that's within...
Trillions.
Trillions, yeah.
Well, sorry, in Ireland. Yeah. In Ireland, it's just billion. But, like, globally, it's absolutely enormous, you know? And, like, so these markets wouldn't even be economically viable if it weren't for basically welfare from states. And with private banks, they're just what's giving oxygen to the fossil fuel industry. I think Morgan Chase bankers, they have been investing more aggressively in fossil fuels than actual fossil fuel companies themselves, like more than Exxon, more than BP.
So the World Bank are at it with other methods as well.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about it is, the World Bank, they're receiving more money back in interest and repayments than they have to have. So it's in their interest to keep the cycle going. They don't want to literally come off the only thing I can think of is, they're like a methadone patient, and the patient is grateful to be getting the little cup of methadone, but they don't realize that they're just being kept there indefinitely. And there is very much that cycle in finance. is a dangerous one when you know that the largest, you know.
Yeah, but then it look, then you look back at domestically, and you look at what our government's doing, and it's keep cups, straws, and carbon taxes, and you're saying this, yeah, really, we're not at this ball game at all. We're really not at this ball game at all.
The budget is next week, isn't it?
Yeah, budget is next week.
So the budget is coming. I think the Greens are looking for €20 as the figure for the carbon tax. The estimate is Pascal will come somewhere between 7 and 10. And unlike what the Greens had initially suggested in terms of the dividend and the give back, that it's just going to be a not progressive tax that hits the lowest. Unfortunately, it won't. It'll be a regressive tax if they go that flat rate model.
I think you have to worry when you see all the people you'd usually find yourself on the opposite side to, when they're all saying, yeah, carbon tax is the way to go. And you're looking and you're going, yeah, I have never, ever agreed with you on absolutely anything. Yeah, so what's going on?
Yeah. And the thing is with the fee and dividend scheme, there isn't... there isn't actually support in the literature to show that this works equitably. It's weird that climate change, that science is telling us, look, this is an issue where we're going to have to transform all sectors of the economy, and it's just been reduced to kind of squabbling about carbon tax.
So
we pull our hair out. You get a great panel of people onto
Saoirse was on, and she was brilliant.
And they turn around and say, let's all talk about carbon tax. And you're like, no.
It's never really on industry.
I watched Saoirse. She was on. I won't even mention the program. But she was on. She was very good.
She's
and
fantastic.
The issue of carbon tax was brought up. And as a Green, and she is a very lefty Green, we quite like her and get on great with her. And she said, no.
Yeah.
Because there's loads more needs to be done
first. Exactly. Why are we still putting public money into subsidising really environmentally damaging activities and then asking people to pay for it as well, you know, to pay a tax for it as well? So I don't know.
It is. Yeah. It's
And the other thing I think that's particular to Ireland is how our corporate tax levels are really facilitating fossil fuel profits. So that's seen directly with the coal marketing company.
Yeah.
That's the company that sells Cedarhans coal globally.
Operating out of here.
Operating just down the road.
Yeah.
From a tiny, tiny office, very inconspicuous.
There's a house locally that I think in the Panama Papers had 142
companies registered.
Oh my god!
And that's a kilometre and a half away.
Yeah,
I can give you another one. That's not that one.
And then we have to put up with the absolute
hollowing out of the state.
But
then they will stand up and say, by the way, we're not a tax haven.
I know.
Which it must be one of the most. People shouldn't be. They shouldn't get away with saying stuff that are blatant lies. You know, it's one thing when people.
We're in the Trumpian era, and we are. And it's not just here. It's in the UK. It's in America. It's in Brazil. We're in this Trumpian era, where the aim is not to get caught. It's not that you're afraid of getting caught on a lie. It's that you tell the next lie so fast afterwards that nobody ever gets to catch up on the thread of lies.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's how fast can you fire the lies out?
Just remember that the day that this global climate strike took place, the biggest climate action protest in the history of the world, our Taoiseach chose to open a
runway.
A runway.
Yeah, but then again, Trudeau was
striking.
He was striking. Yeah. And you're like,
do you understand?
You're the guy with the power.
Yeah, you're him. I don't know how to say this to you.
Alberta Tarsa.
I know.
So it's, you know, and I said it. I said that you know, decision maker / protester is the new sheep in wolf's clothing. I got it so mixed up, but I was close, Tony. I was close.
We got the idea. Yeah, we got what you're saying.
Age does it to us.
Gets us all in the end.
But just in terms of just one thing I want to say with Ireland and the tax thing is that we as well have the biggest corporations in the world that are here solely to avoid tax. So Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple. These companies are investing really heavily in developing artificial intelligence mm-hmm. technologies to enhance the efficiency of oil and gas extraction. Mm. So we're just really facilitating the profits of fossil fuel production across the board, you know, not only in the actual fossil fuel companies themselves, but within big tech as well, which kind of despite its green kind of reputation and the idea of a cloud, which seems very, you know. Yeah,
it's more a dungeon, really.
But again, and we plan for data centers. And
exactly.
Data centers just consume at incredible rates.
While you said data centers, Noteworthy are doing an investigation on data centers. Have a look. Well worth having a look at.
Cool.
So you're right, though. We facilitate tax avoidance, we would say, not tax evasion, but whatever clothes you want to hang on it, it doesn't really matter. It's still the hollowing out of other people's livelihoods to the betterment of the already mega wealthy. And what we're seeing, unfortunately, in Ireland is that it's only gone in one direction, whereby we've gone from I'm right in saying, and I had this conversation with Seamus Coffey, you remember a couple of weeks ago, Martin, where Ireland is a total outlier, whereby our corporate tax rate is nearly 35% above in our total tax take than any other country sitting around. And you know, to say that that country doesn't stick out as a tax haven. Yeah.
Before I came out, the Sunday Business Post had posted about returns and corporation taxes nearly 600 million ahead of where they expect it to be. Now, that's a lot of money to be ahead.
But that's based on last year where it was billions ahead. So they even estimated it out further.
And it's still ahead. So, you know, we do have a problem. And when everything changes, that will eventually all change. And then there's just a huge hole. This massive, massive hole.
Totally.
What other things have you on the go? Is there something else coming up that you have coming up? Or are you going to stay focused where you are for the time being?
Yes, I recently wrote a report for Friends of the Earth on gas, actually, and was looking a little bit into data centres because the ESB next year are actually going to build 4 new gas terminals in Dublin. So I asked them what this was for, and they kind of said, you know, just increasing energy demand. But actually, you know, their own reports have said, well, a third of our energy by 2027 is going to come from data centers. They said, so is it for data centers? Data centers consume energy all of the time. And, you know, this is just going to be fed into the grid for everyone. But it's a bit coincidental.
Yeah, if we were being really mad, we might say there looks like a coincidence.
It looks like there's a bit of a coincidence here.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And we have to get wise to this.
Well, I do see that the proposed terminals on the West Coast are going to be that's not going to be so easy. What they're going to try down there. I do see it as a flashpoint. People do not want fracked gas in this country. They do not want it.
I mean, it's how could we really that we banned it here because of its...
Yeah.
Well, we do hypocrisy so well.
We really do. First-class hypocrites.
We'll import it.
Yeah, we just don't want it here. We'll import it. Yeah. But I mean, it's even within the island of Ireland, it could be a real issue because Tamboran Resources have applied for a license to frack in Fermanagh, which is where the Shannon River starts. Mm. So if they get licensed to frack, I mean, you know, fracking doesn't really understand borders and that'll pollute because it always does. It'll pollute the whole Shannon if that goes ahead, you know. So,
I think for a country with one really major river that runs through, and we only have one really major river.
The Falcon.
We need to protect that token.
You can take the boy out of the city, but you can't take the city out of the
boy out of Ballymun.
But the Shannon is, you know, it is a flashpoint in so many different ways for so many different communities that I would expect that to come up against real resistance.
It already is. I suppose that's what gives us great hope as well, you know, is that there's a lot, kind of feel very grim a lot of the time, but like the movement is just getting so much bigger and bolder.
That's because it is grim, and that's why it's getting
And that's
bigger.
When people knuckle down.
That is true. Like, I mean, people always say, that's when the mobilization happens. And it does seem to be, let's try be optimistic, because you can, if you read all the data, you might say, oh, to hell with it and go, let's all just
Planet B.
This nonsense. but you know, there are steps people can do, and we do know that the only thing the politician fears more is losing his seat, or his or her seat. And if you can put them under pressure there, you know, let's tell the truth. There's been some great victories over the years. The water charges were defeated by mass non-payment and mass protest. That's what defeated them. It wasn't Micheál Martin and Enda Kenny sitting down to have a conversation at all.
It is great. It's great to see that the movement and the from an old fart like me looking at young people going out and getting motivated, because they're not politically motivated. In general, and I say that in general, there are people who are very politically motivated.
There are people that are fantastic,
But on the environment, pretty much right across the board, which is great.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it's that'll kind of sustain us as well, you know, in kind of coming together and working at it together.
People learn, they will learn these things and bring them to the next campaign.
Exactly.
And the more importantly, we do go back to housing quite a bit, but all of this is connected.
Of course.
Housing,
of course,
health, the challenges around the environment, all of these things are connected. And if people draw the dots and they're, you know, Martin, I'm going to claim this is not really me. It's more, you know, they're all more radicalized these days, you know?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Claudette, look, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
You'll have to come back into us if there's an appeal, and you'll have to come back into us afterwards and have a chat with us about that.
Can people look up the information for what you guys are doing on?
ClimateCaseIreland.ie. We also have our campaign to get the government to divest from Colombian coal. So we recently started our social media for that. It's in its infancy, and we would very much actually like to get a volunteer if anyone would feel interested in this issue and would like to help out. It would be great. But you can find us at Stop Blood Coal Ireland on Facebook, or else the Latin America Solidarity Centre. There's all the information about the campaign on the website there too.
Great. Just a reminder to listeners, our live show at the end of October is coming very soon. We have some great guests lined up, and look, I'm not saying anything, but I'm just, you know, I'm kind of a bit intimidated at this stage. If you head over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, you'll get 25% off. If you feel like paying the full price, go to Eventbrite, folks. I don't care. come along. We'll all have a great night. Talk to you all soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.